Good morning. My name is Susan Podobradsky, and I'm a member at James Reeb Unitarian Universalist Congregation. It's good to be together again and to be reminded that our beloved community lives and breathes not only within the walls of our building at the corner of 4th and East Johnson, but beyond as well. This is a virtual space of radical love, and we are so glad you're here. Whatever the color of your skin, what you believe in, where you come from, how you got here, how you identify yourself, who or how you love, and how your body moves through space, we are glad you're here. Come, bring your heart, your hopes, your hands. You are welcome here. We especially welcome all of you who are worshiping with us for the first time. We're glad you're here, and we hope that you stay for our virtual coffee hour after the service for conversation. Just stay on this Zoom meeting to participate. Please visit our website if you would like to learn more about our congregation and Unitarian Universalism. You can find announcements on our website as well as on our Facebook page and through our weekly email. Please contact us at office@jruuc.org if you would like to receive our weekly email. Our service is being led today by Sarah Cook, a member of our congregation. If you have a joy or a sorrow you would like to share today, please send it to candle@jruuc.org or type it into the Zoom chat feature. We ask that you do this before the end of the message for all ages, and we'll read your joy or sorrow later in the service. We'll be inviting everyone to enable their video at the end of the service so we can see each other. We invite you into this virtual space with music. You may want to gather your home chalice or a candle at this time so you can light it with us later in the service. Let us move now into our time of worship.
Come into the circle of love and justice. Come into the community of mercy, holiness, and health. Come, and you shall know peace and joy. Please join in singing hymn number 1000, Morning Has Come. You'll hear the first verse sung as a solo, and then we will all join in on the first verse.
I invite everyone to light your chalices at home. The words for lighting our chalice come from Marjorie Montgomery. Life is a gift for which we are grateful. We gather in community to celebrate the glories and the mysteries of this great gift. Please join in our musical response, led today by Rand Hill.
May the light which is before you nurture and sustain the light within you.
Good morning. My name is Isaac Gadient. I am president-elect here at James Reeb. Today I'm going to be reading one of my favorite books as a child, The Giving Tree by Shel Silverstein. And the tree was often alone. And the boy grew older. The boy character seems to always want something more here and something different. The tree just longs for the simplicity of the old days, being with the boy. Notice the tree and the narrator of the story, the book here, continue to call the boy a boy, even though he's incredibly old. And near the end of his days, the boy wants too much, and the tree perhaps gives too much. But the tree does set her own desires aside to help the boy and hopes that he will be happy. It doesn't actually seem that the boy is very happy. I often compare the word content to a sort of negative companion word, complacent. I think of being complacent as like sitting still or not thinking there's anything more to do, being okay with the way things are, even though maybe they aren't, and there's more we could do. But I think of content being okay with no matter how things are. If things are out of control and they're beyond our control, but we can find contentment, that's a bit more positive. They're very similar, and it's difficult to talk about. It's a fine line, but to be complacent is maybe to give up, and to be content is to invest in your own peace of mind or serenity, and we find it through spirituality rather than selfishness. So I like to look up words in what's called an etymological dictionary. Etymology is the study of different parts of words, their histories, where they come from, what they originally meant. And complacent comes from being pleased with oneself. And content comes from con, which means with or together, and tenere, meaning to hold or to stretch. And so I see a lot of holding and stretching from the tree. And I see a lot of the boy doing whatever he wants. But what's interesting about this story is the tree is happy. It says once that the boy loves the tree, but it mostly says that the tree was happy. And if you look at the tree, there's this big, beautiful, healthy, full tree, and by the end it's just a stump, but the tree was happy. So the tree was happy simply being with the boy. No matter the outcome of our work, our intention and love we put into giving to and thinking of others, we can increase our own happiness, regardless of how others might feel. That said, we do hope to bring others peace and joy and help them to be healthy and free if it's ever possible. So let's please watch a short video. It's also a kind of parable of sorts. Thank you. The character in this short film didn't give all their apples, all their branches, their whole trunk. The gifts were relatively small. The significance of the giving here, that these acts of kindness and generosity became daily acts. And as American author Annie Dillard said, how we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. The Giving Tree was one of my favorite books when I was young, and now that I'm older, I think it's kind of sad. I know there's a lot to unpack with that book, but when I first saw this short Thai film piece about 6 years ago, and still every time I watch it, I tear up a little bit, and I'm inspired to do better, be my best self. I can be like the eyeglass salesperson shaking my head at people giving money to homeless, or the cook was shaking their head at giving the dog a little food. We can't solve homelessness, poverty, hunger individually. But the character isn't saving the world. This character is making their own immediate world more beautiful, a better place, and bringing more of their own pure spirit for their own experience with everyone they come in contact with. May it be so. And may we be so.
As Unitarian Universalists, we find wisdom and inspiration in many places. Jewish and Christian scriptures and other sacred texts, the arts, science, nature, our own experiences. Our tradition keeps us open to revelation from many sources. Today's wisdom comes from the American writer Wendell Berry, a poem called The Peace of Wild Things. When despair for the world grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free.
Back when I was in high school, girls were supposed to be built like Marilyn Monroe. I wasn't. Padded bras didn't help much. It was such a relief to me when pencil-thin supermodel Twiggy came along. But then my friends, who were built more like Marilyn Monroe, got to feel inadequate instead. And that's not what I wanted for them. Back when I was in high school, men seldom made passes at girls who wore glasses. I did, and they didn't. For a while, I tried contact lenses, but allergies made my eyes gum up when I did research in dusty libraries. There's always something wrong. Too awkward, too opinionated, too old, too wrinkled, not popular enough, not well enough dressed, not athletic enough, not doing enough to save the world. It's in the very air we breathe, isn't it? Is discontent simply the human condition? Well, yes and no. The negative emotions, the uncomfortable ones, are part of our makeup as humans. They evolved to promote our survival as hunters and gatherers, roaming about as extended families in search of scarce food and competing with other clans to get it. Fear helped you get away from the tiger and stay back from the edge of the cliff. Anger gave you a burst of energy to defend yourself and others. Fear and anger flood us with hormones for fight or flight. Disgust kept you from eating things that could make you sick. Guilt and shame, guilt over having harmed someone else, shame over lapses from being the person you hoped to be, motivated us to stay in right relationship and make amends when we screwed up. These are valuable survival skills for specific acute situations. And let me say right here, I don't for a moment suggest we should be cheerful all the time and pretend negative feelings weren't there. It's as important today to get out of the way as the truck as it was once to get away from the tiger. I'm also not talking about clinical depression. I'm talking about the societal messing that we're supposed to feel bad about ourselves and others. I'd suggest changes in the last 200 or 300 years took those uncomfortable emotions that evolved to help us and worked them into chronic and dysfunctional forms that work against our survival. Going back to the Industrial Revolution, changes in technology have conspired to push us toward a condition of toxic discontent. First, the rise of factories changed the nature of work for many people. A lot of work shifted from outdoors to indoors and from active to sedentary. Previously, it was only the wealthy who had the luxury to sit around all day and eat as much as they wanted. An underfed physique, muscles, and a tan had been marks of the working class. But after low-wage work moved into textile mills and telephone switchboards and mail rooms and call centers, fashion turned on its head. Now it was the rich who had the leisure and the resources to play tennis and winter in Florida and eat fresh fruits and vegetables instead of cheap starches. To be bronze, slim, and muscular became desirable. Look at the men on romance paperback covers. For women, corsets got tighter and tighter. By my day, we didn't wear corsets, but girdles were still a thing. A whole industry of diet plans arose to promote this new passion for thinness. The new fashion in body shape was even worse than the old one because it took on moral overtones and, unfortunately, still does. When the poor couldn't afford enough calories, you could hardly blame them for being skinny. Some people might, but that's another sermon. But taking in more calories than you burn could look like a failure of will. Body weight evoked deadly sins like sloth and gluttony, maybe even lust. Sylvester Graham, the Presbyterian minister who invented graham crackers, advocated a vegetarian diet free of sugar or white flour as a way to avoid thinking about sex. Moralizing about looks creates feelings of shame that do nothing for survival or right relationship. To make matters even worse, mass production introduced a new way to compare your body to others: clothing sizes. Homemade or custom-made clothes used to be fitted to the individual. But once clothes or patterns were made in factories and sold through a Sears catalog, anonymous buyers were defined as size 12, 14, 16, whatever. Your supposed sloth and gluttony had a number. Which brings me to a second way technology promoted chronic discontent: numerical measurement. We have the tools now to attach a number to just about anything. The bathroom scale, what an invention. Calories, body mass index. Not sure you're smart enough? Check your grade point average and your SAT score. Athletic enough? With a stopwatch, you can compare yourself to runners on the other side of the world. Popular enough? Count your friends, likes, and followers on social media. So many ways to worry about whether you measure up or decide you don't. We even attach numbers to things that are totally subjective. 5-star reviews. A scale of 1 to 10 for everything from sexual hotness to pain. There's a story by Anne Herbert about why Adam and Eve had to leave the Garden of Eden. It starts, "In the beginning, God didn't just make two people. God made a bunch of us. God wanted us to have fun and said, you can't really have fun unless there's a whole gang of you. God put us in Eden, which was a combination garden and playground and park, and told us to have fun. At first, we did have fun, just like God expected. We rolled down the hills, waded in the streams, climbed on the trees, swung on the vines, ran in the meadows, frolicked in the woods, hid in the forest, and acted silly. We laughed a lot. Then one day, this snake told us that we weren't having real fun because we weren't keeping score. Back then, we didn't know what score was. When he explained it, we still couldn't see the fun. But he said we should give an apple to the person who was best at all the games. And we'd never know who was best without keeping score. We could all see the fun of that, of course, because we were all sure we were the best. It was different after that. We yelled a lot. We had to make up new scoring rules for most of the games. Others, like frolicking, we stopped playing because they were so hard to score. The story goes on, but you get the idea. Of course, some measurements are useful. But too often, I suspect we measure just because we can. We have the technology to do so. It drags us into needless comparisons and false expectations, into shame and judgment. It presses us towards standardization and skews our priorities. Like frolicking, values like creativity and kindness are hard to score. A third big result of the Industrial Revolution was a shift from scarcity to overproduction. Back in the days of hunting and gathering and subsistence farming, too many people competed for too little food. A lot of people died young. With the rise of mass production, the pendulum swung the other way. Factories produced a surplus of goods, far more than we need. Where shortages occur today, it's usually a problem of maldistribution, not total supply. Economic competition no longer meant consumers competing for scarce goods. It meant overflowing goods competing for consumers. For the producers to stay in business, they had to boost demand. How better to increase demand than to make people unhappy with what they have? Thought your house was clean enough? Your whole family's going to get sick unless you buy the right vacuum cleaner. Last year's clothes still fit? Oh, but you need this year's fashions. comfortable with getting older? Don't be. Here's a cream to get rid of those wrinkles. A growing economy depends on people always wanting more. It's almost unpatriotic not to. There's no such thing as enough. We live in a cultural mindset of scarcity and inadequacy, fear of missing out, loss of self-esteem, noticing other people's inadequacies too, to keep everyone self-conscious and wanting. A fourth factor pushing chronic discontent involves communications technology. First the printing press, then newspapers and magazines, then radio and television spread more and more news, faster and faster. Bad news sells more papers. It brings higher ratings. Negative political campaigns swing more votes. The more we learned, the unhappier we became. Then came cable TV and the internet and Facebook and a whole bunch of things I don't even know the names of. So many places to get our news. We stopped all listening to Walter Cronkite and started tuning in to whichever sources matched our biases. Me too. We learn to disdain people who get their news from a different source and see issues differently from us. We became less and less attuned to the humanity of our neighbors, more and more discontent. There have always been demagogues and foreign powers who tried to divide and conquer. There have always been political leaders who used fear to suppress dissent. What the new technology does is make it quicker and easier to do this on a massive scale. It was only a matter of time till someone would attack our nation by exploiting our divisions with misinformation to weaken our bonds as a society. And sometimes we've been complicit, not on purpose, but by buying into the message that we're supposed to feel bad. That message is a lie foisted on us in the interests of wealth and power. We don't have to play along. Our Unitarian Universalist principles call on us to affirm and promote the inherent worth and dignity of every person. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. We can choose to resist the pressures of commercialism, of comparing ourselves to others, of divide and conquer politics. We can resist with a walk in the woods, a romp with the dog, a gratitude practice, meditation, prayer. We can subdue the impulse to carp on each other. Who am I to say how you should eat or raise your children? When we practice kindness and generosity and care of self and others, we help shape community norms. Fear and anger and guilt and judgment will still be available when we need them, but we don't have to live in them. Contentment isn't about denial or inaction. As Isaac said, it isn't complacence or smug self-satisfaction. It's about the inner wisdom to define our own priorities, to know our limits, and to choose for ourselves when to honor them and when to stretch. To live with the ups and downs of life and be okay with that. Fundamentally content. Blessed be.
This congregation is committed to service to our community, so we give half of the unrestricted Sunday offerings to local organizations whose work furthers our mission. This morning, our Share the Plate donations will go to the Free the 350 Bail Fund, which seeks to prioritize bailing out of Black people incarcerated in the Dane County jail system, and also seeks to end the unjust and antiquated prison and jail system in general. Getting people who are awaiting trial out of the jail is especially important now as COVID-19 spreads rapidly in jails and prisons. Donations can be made by typing the link you see on your screen into the web browser. The link will also be shared in chat. In the spirit of love and for the continuing work of this congregation, we will now take the offering. For the gifts received and the gifts which we ourselves are, may we be truly grateful. Yet more than that, may we be committed to using these gifts to make a difference in the world, to increase love and justice, to decrease hatred and oppression, to expand beloved community, to share and to keep sharing as long as ever we can. Amen.
As we leave this virtual space made sacred by our presence and our intention, let us carry with us the love, the courage, and the strength which we learn and practice here, knowing that we have enough, that we are enough. Go in peace, blessed be, and amen.